I wish everyone could see this table up close, and if you don't mind, I'm gonna take a photo right now. It's really amazing, all the things we've brought, all the different kinds of work we do. Watch out, you're in this photo. Okay. And I know everybody comes to church for different reasons and are looking for different things that might speak to your soul. Some of you may have already been spiritually nourished by the choir. And some of you may be still waiting for a word from me or Reverend Ben that will speak to your heart, but I've had my sermon. This is what has spoken to me. This table full of the amazing work that so many people do, a picture worth a thousand words. The Word made flesh and metal and wood and paper and plastic and all a zillion component parts. To me, this table is the answer to a question that delighted my controversy-loving Sunday school class when I was a teenager. And the question is, can you be a Christian on a desert island? Now, to be fair, this question was posed before Tom Hanks got stranded for years on the movie Castaway, so none of us had really thought about what a desert island would really be like. We were just kind of thinking of the cartoon where you sit there and nothing happens. Anyway, can you be a Christian there? Some argued yes. As long as you thought the right thoughts and maybe prayed some prayers, it wouldn't matter if you had a Bible or a church or anything else. You could just exist alone and be a Christian that way. But others argued no. Christians need to be in community with others. We need to do things like give to the poor and share food with others and participate in the church and other ways of making our faith come to life. And to me, the work represented on this table argues for that, how we can't live our faith in a vacuum. We need to do, to work, to share, to communicate. Faith happens in the midst of us, and God is revealed among us. This table, to me, is close to the heart of Christianity. It shows us, if you will, that God did not stay far off on the desert islands of heaven, but came to us to work and play and create and struggle with us. A few years before I was born, when my father and mother had barely started dating, my father took off for a pilgrimage to India. He was a spiritual seeker and hoping to get enlightened, and he did a lot. He chanted, he prayed, he meditated under trees, he whirled, he stretched, he walked in circles around holy places, hoping for a flash of inspiration. But ultimately, he returned home to New York City and became, of all boring things, a Presbyterian. And part of the reason for this was that in a land of so many different religions, he saw that the Christians truly stood out in India for what they did. They were the ones engaged in public works of mercy who were caring for the orphans and clothing the beggars. This visible witness was what convinced him to become a Christian himself. So I grew up well-grounded in that particular truth that our faith is not in what we think or in experience, but it's in what we do. Our religion has to be embodied. And so today, we ask God's blessing on the tools that make this possible for all of us. The things that enable us to feed the hungry, to teach or to learn, to heal the sick, to comfort the afflicted, occasionally to afflict the comfortable. We know that we are all seeking to let God shine through in our work, whether it's paid or unpaid or full-time or part-time. And so we ask God's blessing on that work. But wait, what if that's not the way it works for you? What if you spend most of your life doing work that actually compromises your ideals? What if you're pushing papers for a corporation you care nothing for, or doing a service for a cause that seems endless and hopeless? What if you just work for a paycheck, or you're just going to school so you can get this certification, and you hope you don't, your boss or your teacher or your fellow students don't see that you have your fingers crossed behind your back the whole time? Or what if you know that your work is burning you out, crushing your soul, and you're going to have to quit soon? Can we still bless those tools? Can they still be part of this beautiful picture here? I think the answer is yes. And if you'll follow me, I think we can find the rationale for that after a bit of digging around in this baffling parable of dishonest wealth that Jim read us from the Gospel of Luke. And let me tell you, this parable has caused many a scholar to speculate and research and push their peas around on the academic plate, trying to explain it in a way that makes sense. So we can try to find out what ancient money lending practices were, or maybe whether the manager would have received a commission versus a salary, or what proportion of the loan might have been interest that he could cancel, or all things you can speculate about, but it's still hard to make this seem like a parable that Jesus could have told. There's a website called TrumpOrJesus.com, which you should all go and explore. It gives you quotes to identify, and you have a 50-50 chance of choosing who said this quote. And you can all pat yourselves on the back for being able to easily pick the authors, but the makers of that quiz did not put this parable in. And I'm not sure we would get this right. Anyway, Christian scholars have spun their collective wheels forever, trying to make it make sense. I picture a medieval scribe recopying a Bible manuscript very laboriously, stopping, getting up from the table and tapping their superior on the shoulder and saying, "Could you take a look at this passage where Jesus says to make friends by means of dishonest wealth? Don't you think it's missing a not somewhere in the sentence?" Nope. Though it seems unbelievable, and actually, especially when it seems unbelievable, it's quite likely to be authentic. Anyone can make up fake Jesus sayings. The internet is swarming with them, from "God won't give you more than you can handle," or "God helps those who help themselves," or "hate the sin, love the sinner," or any number of other theologically bland, fake sentences. Jesus isn't bland here, but his point is really hard to find. Jesus tells a story of a manager who cheats his employer, and then the employer turns around and praises the manager. And why? Because having no job or future to look forward, he's made some friends for himself, divesting from money but investing in friends who will remember him in time of need. The story doesn't seem ethical at all. And it doesn't help that Jesus follows it up with no less than 5 pithy but mostly unrelated conclusions, the final verses. For that hodgepodge, I actually do blame the scribes. Anyway, I think what Jesus meant is this. The manager was in a sticky situation. His boss wanted an accounting from him, and he knew when he got to the bottom of it, he'd be fired. So in the little time he had, the manager made a trade. He used the last bit of power he had and traded it for social capital. He lost his power, he lost his job, but he gained friends. And Jesus is probably saying, but you have to hear it with sarcasm in his voice. Jesus is sarcastically saying, look at it this way. If anyone, your average, unethical Joe Schmo on the street, if anyone could make a wise move like this, Swap short-term financial loss for long-term interpersonal gain, then can't you? You, the children of light, you with ethics and righteousness on your mind, can't you do the same kind of thing for a better reason? If any random person can do the good thing for a wrong reason, can't you also do a good thing for a right reason? I wonder if he's asking us to gamble away our money for God's ends, knowing our jobs, our work won't last forever, and no matter how secure we feel, if we take a long-term perspective, we know all our work will come to an end. Can't we trade some of that away? Not in order to build friendships for ourselves, but in order to build the kingdom of righteousness, a just, a peaceful world. Whatever our work may be, it won't last forever. Can we make the most of it while we can? Or to look at it another way. Even this unjust manager understands that money is not the end. It's a means to an end, and that wealth is there to be traded away. So, to get back to the question, if your work feels like a compromise, if you hesitate to bless your tools, to put them on this table, knowing they aren't your spiritual calling, but just a cynical way to get by, then know this. Jesus told his followers a sarcastic story so he could complain that his followers were not shrewd and cunning enough. You can't serve God and wealth at the same time, but surely you can make your wealth work for you, like the dishonest manager did, and so maybe you can make your wealth serve God too. It's kind of how Jesus told us to be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. And if you think about it, it's kind of a fun challenge. A favorite TV character of mine in a long-running sitcom, after years of working for an extremely corrupt company, went out in a blaze of glory, having served as an informant to the feds and toppling the company with him as he went. Fictional, yes, but fantastically inspiring. Or to go in another direction, I know some people, real-world people, who are working terrible, high-paying jobs, gritting their teeth to get through the ethical compromises it makes them make, but doing it because it enables them to give money to charity, and that to them is more important. So at the end of the service, when you pick your tools back up, take them home, or at home when you pick up a new tool, I ask you to ponder this. Are they being used wholeheartedly in God's service? And if they're not, if they're compromising, or if you feel cynical about them, can you get a little more shrewd and cunning in the way you make them work for you? Can you score a backhanded win for the kingdom of justice and righteousness? The good news for today? It's okay to be cynical and pragmatic. We would all love to have full-time, well-paying jobs that fulfill the deepest longings of our soul, a vocation in the truest sense of the word, a calling that is also a job. But the truth is that most of us don't have those kinds of jobs, especially in a technological age where paid work is getting scarcer and less satisfying to the workers. Jesus seems to say, "That's okay. Go ahead, do what you can, but don't let wealth be your goal. Wealth is just a tool. So earn it and then trade it away." I hope this can bring some hope to anyone struggling with their work or their lack of work. But know this, that even when we do not do the right thing, God has a way of working through us and making us into God's tools, and somehow, by God's grace, God's work will be done. Amen.